This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On this Memorial Day, we're heading to the World War II Museum in Natick. If you haven't heard of it, you're not alone, because this is not your typical museum. There's no sign above the door. The address isn't listed. And you can visit by appointment only, and only after explaining why you're interested. As its website says, the museum is not for entertainment.
The World War II Museum is run by Kenneth Rendell, a collector of rare letters and documents, and he has a passion for all things World War II. He's spent decades amassing more than 6,000 artifacts, from Nazi uniforms to American bazookas and a Sherman tank. Rendell was a young boy during World War II, and when I visited his museum, he told me he's always been haunted by the war.
When I was a kid, the photograph of the ramp down on the landing craft and the soldiers running out of it onto Omaha Beach terrified me. I couldn't imagine how anybody did that, to go into that murderous fire.
Many years after that early fascination with that terrifying picture, Ken Rendell has done something extraordinary. The World War II Museum in Natick is his personal collection, and there's so much here, from Nazi propaganda posters to the jeeps and rifles that American soldiers drove and fired, to the cigarettes and matches they carried in their packs. Rendell says these small objects help bring a big story to life.
It's about people interacting with the artifacts of all types that are in the museum and gaining as much as possible some feeling about the period and some feeling about the people. That's why there are so many personal articles here, because I want things that people will personally relate to.
Give me an example of something that sort of goes beyond the sort of normal static museum exhibit that you're talking about here, something that really brings home the experience.
Well, this is an example of the kinds of things that soldiers carried in their backpack. And I think it very much humanizes them. You have a razor and razor blades, Barbasol, hair cream.
The mess kit.
The general mess kit to eat from, the K rations, and you can see what's in them. Great emphasis on cigarettes. Cigarettes were used as currency in lots of situations, particularly in prisoner of war camp. Toilet paper, fundamental first aid, tablets to put in water that could be contaminated.
Well, it's amazing the range of stuff where you've just pointed out these very personal items that a soldier would have carried in World War II, and we're standing in the shadow of a Sherman tank, and you sort of have everything in between here as well, right?
Yes, I don't really like the idea of collecting only one type of thing. That's a completely different kind of museum. I was interested in preserving the atmosphere that a person experienced, that a person lived in.
You encourage the folks that do visit here to interact with some of the stuff. For example, these rifles here, you say pick them up, feel them.
Yes, I there's a great deal of value in literally smelling, not just feeling, but smelling. I think that there's a sense of the ghosts that are in this museum. And I think picking things up, and that's why I encourage it. I want people to get as close to this as they can, all the while understanding that what they can never in any way get close to is the anxiety.
The anxiety felt by the soldiers.
Felt by soldiers.
Right.
That when soldiers looked around themselves in a landing craft, and they know that maybe everyone in that boat will be dead, and that this kind of thing was happening every day. That anxiety of not knowing the future, it can never be replicated.
From floor to ceilings filled with World War II memorabilia, and it comes to life with these gentlemen to my right here to talk about it. So I want to give these guys a round of applause for all they've done for us.
One of the ways Rendell brings the ghosts of this museum alive is to invite in World War II vets to talk about the war.
I'm a survivor. I was 20 years old when I landed. I was over 100 when I came home.
This is Sammy Bornstein of Randolph. He's 85. In 1945, he was among the first waves of Marines to land on Iwo Jima in the South Pacific. On this day at the museum, he sits in front of a table-sized map of the island that was recovered from a U.S. warship. And with difficulty, He explains the horror of that battle, which lasted 36 days and killed more than 6,000 Marines.
And all I did was jump from one hole to another hole, trying to avoid being killed. I don't know why I wasn't. Everybody on all sides of me were killed. That's why I'm doing this here. I don't know why.
Bornstein wears a black beret with the words Iwo Jima Survivors, 1945. He almost didn't survive. He says after more than a month of bloody combat, the island was more or less secure, and the Marines were getting ready to board the troop ships to leave. They'd been ordered to hand in their ammunition, which Bornstein did, but he tucked two rounds into his pocket to take home as a souvenir. Then a remnant of Japanese fighters launched a surprise attack.
Arthur Erdman, who was with me for 36 days on my machine gun, he was senior to me. He was older than I was, and we were both corporals. He said, Sam, stay with the gun. Somebody has to stay with the gun. Stay with the gun in the hold here. I'm going out to see what happened. Arthur took two steps out of the, and he was cut down by a waving saber of a Jap looking right in my eyes. I put the two clips and fired twice at short range. I know he hit him. He fell on top of me.
Another veteran and supporter of the museum is Manny Abrams, who flew 30 missions as a navigator on a B-24. Abrams was featured in a book about the 8th Air Force called The Mighty Eighth. He received a letter from a reader, which he shares on this day.
Dear Mr. Abrams, I was born in 1947. For the last 54 years, I have enjoyed a world that is free, prosperous, and above all, safe. We have vacationed many times in Europe. Our children, despite their excellent educations, take this all for granted. I appreciate that it did not have to turn out this way. Our world is a gift purchased through the sacrifice of men like yourself. So thank you again for risking your life for me and my family. Best regards, Jim. I think that's a beautiful letter, a rare one.
It's important, though, isn't it, to hear these voices, and it seems very much a part of what you're doing here.
I think it's extremely important because war is not entertainment.
Again, Ken Rendell of the World War II Museum.
And this museum is not about entertainment, and people were very proud. In reality, it was very traumatic for anybody who was in combat as opposed to being in the quartermaster corps. Mm-hmm. They could all come back and say what an experience they saw the world. But anybody in combat had all the problems that people have today, particularly if they served in the Pacific.
How long did it take you to put this museum together from when you first got the idea?
I think that this became a really serious endeavor in the mid-1970s, when at that point I had really good collections in a few areas. D-Day, which fascinated me, Battle of Britain, which fascinated me as to how the British people resisted. So I collected these areas in quite a lot of depth, and other areas were quite important that I had collected, and I realized that this was taking on a life beyond just my particular personal interest, and I started collecting the other areas that I hadn't been particularly interested in. For example, the Holocaust, mm-hmm. which is such an upsetting and disturbing area to collect that I had never gone into concentration camp material or that kind of thing.
That's here along with an extraordinary collection of Nazi and SS paraphernalia and uniforms and flags. And what strikes me about, we're in the German section of the museum, what strikes me is sort of the refinement of the uniforms and the symbols and the flags and almost beautiful it is.
Exactly. And it was perceived that way by German people. And I want visitors to the museum to graphically see that Germany went from a broken country and the splendor of the Third Reich was truly incredible. The people who were behind the marketing of the Nazi Party really knew what they were doing. Goebbels really understood the uses of propaganda. that you can tell a simple lie over and over and over again, and people will believe it, and simplify everything. Mm-hmm. Hitler understood the way he delivered speeches was vastly more important than what he said. What he said was almost of no importance. It was the way he delivered it, the way he worked up a crowd. But the power of this display is the way it sucks people in. Then when you come out of this and you go by the French uniforms, which are very plain from the beginning of the war, and then you go into the British section where the marketing in the British section is all about words. Hmm. It's not about symbols, because all of that is the reaction to all of what the Germans were creating.
So, Ken Rendell, what's your intention going forward? Is it to keep it private? Because what's surprising to me about this exhibit right now is I could imagine finding a display like this on the Mall in Washington, D.C., as part of the Smithsonian or something like this. Instead, it's tucked away behind a sort of obscure shopping area west of Boston.
The intention right now is to, in a controlled way, increase people coming here. The way the museum is set up, where you can touch so much material, we have to have a fair amount of control over who comes. I want to maintain this sense of intimacy, but that makes it difficult to increase the number of people. And on Saturdays, for example, we run a capacity, and for many, many months, I mean, it may be Thanksgiving or next Christmas, we're booked on Saturdays. And on other days, we frequently are at maximum. People have to tell us in advance that they want to come. They have to register online on our website. All things that I never would have believed I would be doing.
You know, it's so clear talking to you and seeing the care with which this is all put together that this has enormous personal meaning to you. And I'm just wondering if there's any part of you that is finding it difficult to sort of relinquish it. Do you worry about that?
Oh, absolutely. I have to plan for this museum after I'm gone. I want to have the neutrality of the museum preserved into the future. How do I do that? I have a potential board of directors right now that if I get hit by the proverbial bus. So there's no question. There's no question that right now it's a difficult thing to give up parts of the control. It's a difficult thing that I never can come here on a Saturday. The museum's too busy. There are too many people here. I can't do things. It's taken on a whole new life, and I absolutely, it is emotionally significant to have to react to that. It's very gratifying. I preserve people's lives. My daughter asked me, she said, "Daddy, do you believe in ghosts?" And I said, "Absolutely." And my wife said, "What do you mean you believe in ghosts?" I said, "My museum is full of ghosts. I preserve the lives of people. I preserve what they did. So this place is full of ghosts." And that's really important to me. And I am very passionate about it. This is it. This is my legacy.
Ken Rendell is the owner and curator of the World War II Museum in Natick. To learn more about the museum and to see an audio slideshow about it, go to our website, radioboston.org.